with the Ford County Record for the week of Wednesday, July 31st, 2019. We'll begin today with the article on the front page headlined, Dismissal of Lawsuit versus Paxton B&B Denied. A lawsuit filed by the Illinois Attorney General's office against a bed and breakfast west of Paxton will proceed in Ford County Circuit Court after a judge last Wednesday denied the defense's motion to have the case dismissed or instead have its proceedings postponed. Last October, the Attorney General's office sued Timber Creek Bed and Breakfast over the B&B's refusal to comply with penalties imposed for discriminating against the same-sex couple in 2011. The lawsuit, filed on behalf of the Illinois Department of Human Rights, asked the court to demand the B&B comply with a 2016 order of the Illinois Human Rights Commission, which fined the B&B more than $80,000, including $30,000 in damages payable to the couple, Todd and Mark Watham of Tuscola, along with $50,000 in attorney's fees. The commission determined the B&B discriminated against the Wathans based on their sexual orientation when the business's co-owner, Jim Walder, refused to allow their civil union ceremony at his facility. In denying their request, Walder wrote an email to the Wathans citing various biblical verses and denouncing homosexuality as wrong and unnatural. Since 2016, the B&B's attorney, Jason Craddock of Monee, has been trying to appeal the commission's decision. First, though, the state appellate court, and most recently through the Illinois Supreme Court. Although Craddock's attempts to appeal have been unsuccessful so far, he told Associate Judge Robert Travers last Wednesday that he would continue to fight for Walder's religious liberties, even if that means having to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Craddock's argument in asking for the lawsuit to be, or alternatively, to cancel proceedings, to be asking for proceedings to be postponed, was based on what he said was a pending appeal with the Illinois Supreme Court. Craddock requested that, at minimum, the proceedings be stayed until the Illinois Supreme Court makes a ruling. Assistant Attorney General May Grebe said in response, however, that Craddock inaccurately claims to have petitioned the Illinois Supreme Court on appeal. Grebe said there is no evidence she can find to prove otherwise. Craddock clarified the situation. Craddock said that within the required 35-day time frame following the appellate court's dismissal, the B&B's appeal, he started the proceedings of filing a petition for leave to appeal with the Illinois Supreme Court. The petition, however, was later sent back to him to correct technical deficiencies, Craddock said. Craddock said he then made several subsequent attempts to refile the petition after it was corrected, most recently Wednesday morning. Craddock said he thinks that it is likely the Illinois Supreme Court will agree to hear the appeal due to him having corrected the technical difficulties. If that happens, Craddock said, he feels the Illinois Supreme Court will side in the B&B's favor, noting that the U.S. Supreme Court recently ruled on three similar cases with similar facts to indicate such an outcome is likely. We believe the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling have an impact on this case and very well may reverse this case, Craddock said to Travers. Craddock said he expected the Illinois Supreme Court to have an answer on whatever it will consider the appeal within 30 days. If the state Supreme Court refuses to hear the appeal or denies it, Craddock said he would then appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Grebe, however, reiterated her opinion that Craddock has not shown an appeal is actually pending with the state's highest court. Attempted filings do not count as filings, Grebe said. The chance to file these appeals has run out. Attorney Ruth Wyman of the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois, which is representing the Wathens as additional plaintiffs in the lawsuit, added that it has been more than 2 years since the appellate court denied the BNB's appeal, meaning that there has been more than enough time to appeal to the state Supreme Court. "It appears this is merely a delay action," Wyman said. In denying Craddock's motion to dismiss the lawsuit or stay its proceedings, Travers noticed the amount of time that has passed since the appellate court's ruling. "There has been a stay," Travers told Craddock. "It's been in effect for 2 years." Travers then set a hearing to consider the lawsuit for 11 a.m. September 18. Travers is primarily assigned to hear cases in Livingston County Circuit Court, but he was assigned to the 11th Judicial Circuit's chief judge to hear the lawsuit against the BNB after Ford County Circuit Judge Matt Fitton recused himself due to an unspecified conflict. Another article from the front page, "It's Here to Stay." The Illinois Central Historical Society's Railroad Museum and headquarters will remain in downtown Paxton and will eventually be open regularly again to the public, despite plans to have the building's ownership transferred to the Monticello Railway Museum and to have the ICHS's archives moved to the Piatt County seat. "We are not going in to plunder this place and take all the good stuff and then walk away from this place," stressed Kirk Reynolds, a retired Champaign resident who serves as archive manager for both ICHS and MRM. In 2017, the MRM and ICHS entered into an agreement for the MRM to take over the operation of the museum in Paxton and eventually buy it. Under the agreement, the ICHS's archive documents are to be moved within about 5 years from the museum in Paxton to the archival facilities to be built in Monticello. The ICHS's museum headquarters, though, is not going anywhere, Reynolds said. About the only change is that the museum's name will be changed to the Monticello Railroad Museum's North Campus, Reynolds said. "It's a very historically significant structure, and the MRM recognizes that," Reynolds said. "The MRM has no intention of packing up everything and moving it down to Monticello and then leaving this building to fall apart. The MRM is fully committed to the maintenance of this building, not only for the purpose of maintaining the ICHS archives collection, but also for the building's historical significance here in Paxton," he said. Reynolds called the museum building at 250 North Market Street in Paxton the most significant structure among the MRM's 18 facilities. The other 17 buildings, all located in Monticello, include a Wabash Railroad Depot and an Illinois Central Railroad Depot. The Paxton building, however, is probably more than three times or at least twice the size of the depots in Monticello, Reynolds said, and it's made out of brick, while the Monticello depot is wood. Reynolds added that the Paxton building remains in such great shape. Reynolds said the plan is for the Paxton Museum to eventually be open to the public regularly, perhaps on a designated Saturday each month. Prior to the MRM taking over its operation, the museum has been open two Saturdays per month, but it currently is open only by appointment. Whenever the museum is open to the public on a regular basis, something that could happen as early as next summer, the plan is to also offer tours of the old caboose and boxcar on the building's north side. They are being used for storage purposes currently, Reynolds said. The museum in Paxton, which has been in existence for 29 years, is dedicated to the history of the Illinois Central Railroad, which merged with the Canadian National Railroad in 1999. Among items housed in the museum are photographs, various corporate records, mechanical and structural drawings, maps of properties, and hardware and tools used to conduct railroad operations. Tours can be arranged by emailing Doug Butzow at doug.butzow@mrym.org. A lack of available ICHS members to staff the Paxton Museum and a lack of suitable storage space led to the ICHS Board of Directors' decision to give control of the museum to the MRM 2 years ago. "We don't have very many people in our society who live in Paxton," ICHS board member John Fortner of Watson, Louisiana, told the Ford County Record in 2017. "In fact, we have only one member who does. We just don't have anybody up there to keep it open. So the Monticello Railroad System will be doing that for us." Also, the way that depot was built, it's hard to be able to control the temperature and humidity inside the building. So our archives would not last as long if they remained there. So we're trying to move our archives eventually, and we are trying to partner with the Monticello Railway Museum to do that for us. And news from the Ford County Board. Setbacks still a contentious issue in Ford. Instead of making it so wind turbines can be no closer than 2,250 feet from any property line in Ford County without a waiver from a neighboring landowner, some county board members think there should be two different setbacks implemented, a larger one applying to land occupied by a residence and a smaller one applying to non-residential land. The issue of setbacks, the minimum distance a turbine must be sited from a property line or structure, has been easily the most contentious topic, as the county board has spent the past 2 years working on revisions to its ordinance regulating wind farms. And even though the board hopes to be able to vote on the package of proposed revisions as early as October, the setback issue continues to be unresolved. Last December, 7 of the 12 board members indicated they would support a turbine setback of 2,250 feet from the property lines of non-participating residents from the nuisance turbines can create, such as noise or shadow flicker, or the dangers associated with turbines catching fire or breaking. During a meeting of the board zoning committee on Monday night, however, two board members said they feel such a setback should only apply to residential land, not non-residential properties. "If it's about safety," board member Randy Ferguson said, "safety involves people, not property. It's hard to hurt dirt." Ferguson, a Gibson City resident who serves as the zoning committee's chairman, and Chase McCall, a Gibson City resident who serves as the finance committee's chairman, both would like the board to implement a lesser setback for non-residential land. Ferguson said the distance is negotiable, in his opinion, but he feels it needs to be less than 2,250 feet from a property line. The proposal appears to be in response from concerns expressed by wind farm developers that a 2,250-foot setback would make the construction of a wind farm extremely difficult, if not impossible. Wind farm developers said last December that even a 1,640-foot setback from property lines could negatively impact their planned projects, perhaps even killing them. Developers have been asking for no greater than 1,500-foot setback, and not from property lines, but instead from primary structures such as homes. That is 500 feet larger than the setback currently required under Ford County's wind ordinance, which was enacted in 2008. Meanwhile, board member Ann Erke, of rural Buckley, said she and some other board members do not support a reduced setback applying to non-residential properties. Erke noted that just because land does not contain a residence does not mean that the land is not used by people for hunting, fishing, or other resident recreational activities, for example. She said those people need to be protected as well. Herkes also noted that wind farm developers can always ask non-participating landowners to sign good neighbor agreements that often provide compensation to landowners for agreeing to sign a waiver of the setback requirement, allowing turbines to be built closer than the ordinance allows. We feel like that could be done rather than making a different setback, Herkes said. Herkes said the zoning committee reviewed about half of the proposed ordinance revisions Monday night after receiving a draft of the document from the county clerk and recorder, Amy Frederick. Herkes said some corrections were made Monday, and another committee meeting will be set at the board's August meeting for the purpose of continuing the review and tweaking of the ordinance. Officials weighing whether to allow pot sales. The Paxton City Council's long-term planning committee was scheduled to meet this week to discuss whether to allow or ban cannabis business establishments within the city limits once the sale of recreational marijuana becomes legal in Illinois on January 1st. The Illinois Municipal League recently sent resources about the local regulation of recreational marijuana to its member municipalities, including a model ordinance to prohibit cannabis businesses such as cultivation centers, craft growers, processing organizations, and dispensing organizations. Instead of banning cannabis businesses, cities can instead regulate them through conditional use zoning and impose a municipal tax of up to 3% on resale sales. Paxton Mayor Bill Ingold stressed that neither he nor the two aldermen to whom he has spoken about the issue have made up their minds about how the city will treat marijuana businesses. Ingold said an open discussion about the issue was to be the focus of the meeting set for 7 p.m. Tuesday, July 30th at City Hall. The four members of the committee are Alderman Camelin Johnson Anderson, Eric Evans, Susan Satterley, and Mike Wilson. And now we will look at the obituaries. Eldon Anderson, 82, of Paxton, died at 9:56 p.m. Thursday, July 25, 2019, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton on Pels. Funeral services were at 11 a.m. Monday, July 29th, at Beyer Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with the Reverend David Parker officiating. Burial followed in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Visitation was from 10 to 11 a.m. Monday, July 29th, at the funeral home. Benny D. Borland, 87, of Effingham, father of a Gibson City resident, died on the morning of Monday, July 22, 2019, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. Funeral services were at 4 p.m. Friday, July 26, at the Bauer Funeral Home in Effingham, with burial in Oak Ridge Cemetery. Masonic rites were held at 5 p.m. Thursday, July 25th, at the funeral home, followed by the visitation until 7 p.m. Jack E. Bear, 77, of Homer, father of a Paxton resident, died at 9:44 a.m. Sunday, July 28, 2019, at his home. Funeral services will be held Thursday, August 1st, at Kirby Funeral Home in Homer, with the Reverend Ed Hollis and officiating. Burial will take place at GAR Cemetery in Homer with visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, July 31st. Jess Lewis Burwell, 85, of Paxton, formerly of Urbana, died at 9:20 a.m. Saturday, June 15th, 2019, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton Senior Living. A memorial visitation will be from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday, August 3rd, at Renner Wyckoff Chapel and Crematory in Urbana. Deborah Louise Debbie Foster, 69, of Paxton, died at 9:17 a.m. Saturday, July 27th, with her family by her side at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, July 31st at Beyer Family Funeral Services in Paxton. A private family committal service will be held at a later date in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Visitation was from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, July 30th at the funeral home. Linda Mae Simmons, 71, of Pearland, Texas, formerly of Paxton, died Wednesday, June 19, 2019. A memorial gathering will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, August 24th, in the ballroom at Club Bella Vita at 1548 North Riviera Circle, Pearland, Texas. A formal family memorial will be at 1 p.m. Wednesday, November 27 at Paxton Federated Church, 221 West Center Street, Paxton, followed with a cremation burial at Glen Cemetery in Paxton, where she will be placed in a second interment with her first husband, Robert Bronas. Rufus Tooley, 84, of Chatsworth and formerly of Gilman, died Saturday, July 21st at Carl Foundation Hospital. Cremation rites were accorded by Knapp Redius Funeral Home in Gilman, and no services will be held. Man gets 10 years for beating girlfriend in Paxton. A 42-year-old Paxton man was sentenced to 10 years in state prison after unexpectedly pleading guilty to aggravated domestic battery during a status hearing last Thursday in Ford County Circuit Court. Demetrius D. Cousins was charged in January 2018 with one count of attempted first-degree murder, a Class X felony, and two counts of aggravated domestic battery, a Class II felony, for allegedly forcing his girlfriend's head underwater in their home's bathtub, choking her, and striking her in the face with his hand, fracturing her nose. In exchange for Cousins pleading guilty to one count of aggravated domestic battery, State's attorney, Andrew Killian, agreed to dismiss the other two charges. Cousins will be required to serve at least 85% of his sentence, with credit given for 563 days already served, followed by 4 years of mandatory supervised release. Cousins was also fined and assessed court costs. Health Department collecting dead birds to be tested for West Nile virus. A bench trial has been requested by an Indiana man charged with reckless homicide and aggravated reckless driving in connection with a March 2018 accident near Piper City that killed a Michigan woman. Eduardo D. Rodriguez, 40, of Merrillville, Indiana, asked for the bench trial instead of a jury trial during a hearing last Tuesday in Ford County Circuit Court. Earlier, Rodriguez waived his right to a preliminary hearing to determine whether there was probable cause to proceed to trial. Judge Matt Fitton set the trial for 9:30 a.m. October 3rd, preceded by a pretrial hearing at 11 a.m. September 5th and a motion hearing at 2 p.m. on September 12th. State's attorney, Andrew Killian, filed the two felony charges against Rodriguez on May 6th. Rodriguez had previously only been charged with disregarding a stop sign following a two-vehicle accident that occurred on March 15, 2018, near Piper City, which resulted in the death of Rosemary Pazenke, 66, of Greenville, Michigan. According to charging documents filed in court, Rodriguez allegedly was driving a 2005 Dodge Caravan with a willful and wanton disregard for the safety of persons, and was acting in a reckless manner when the accident occurred at the intersection of U.S. 24 and Ford County Road 1700 East. Killian said Rodriguez was speeding and failed to obey a stop sign at the intersection after passing over four rumble strips. Mrs. Makhensky was pronounced dead at the scene by Ford County Coroner. Rodriguez remains free after posting $2,500 of his $25,000 bond. Health Department collecting dead birds to be tested for West Nile virus. The Ford County Public Health Department is collecting dead birds through October 15th. Christy Wallace, the agency's vector program coordinator, is asking for assistance from the public in the collection of dead birds found in Ford County. Collecting and testing dead birds are important components of the agency's West Nile virus surveillance program. People who find a dead bird in Ford County are asked to contact Ford County Public Health Department at 217-379-9281. Before they submit a dead bird, they should ensure the following criteria are met. The bird is dead, but the carcass is in good condition. Birds should be dead no more than 48 hours prior to collection and should not show any signs of advanced decomposition, maggots, strong odor, dried or deflated eyes. The bird should be double bagged and placed in freezer to preserve for shipping. The birds show no sign it died of other causes than disease. Birds with obvious injuries such as wounds or missing parts should not be submitted for testing. Likewise, crushed carcasses and birds found along roadways are not acceptable. The bird must be one that is acceptable for testing. Some acceptable species are crows, blue jays, grackles, starlings, robins, cardinals, sparrows, finches, hawks, and owls. Birds that will not be accepted include pigeons, ducks, geese, chickens, and other large birds and endangered species. To help identify the type of bird, people can see the pictures on the website at www.dph.illinois.gov/topics/services/diseases/conditions/West Nile virus/dead bird collection. Residents who find dead birds should double bag them in plastic bags. Plastic bags that seal are the best, and then take them to the Ford County Public Health Department office at 235 North Taft Street in Paxton. For more information regarding collection of dead birds, people can contact the agency at 217-379-9281. Smiley to be inducted into the Hall of Fame this fall. Kendra Workman Smiley, a 1970 graduate of Paxton High School, will be inducted this fall into the PBL Alumni Hall of Fame. An author, speaker, and radio host, Smiley was born and raised in Central Illinois and graduated from Paxton High School in 1970. She attended the University of Illinois, where she graduated summa cum laude, and then made her way to the University of North Dakota as her husband John was stationed at Grand Forks Air Force Base. At the University of North Dakota, she earned a master's degree in science and, again, graduating with highest honors. Smiley began her career as a teacher and a coach. She and her husband raised three children, sons, and her work as a mother, entrepreneur, church, and community leader led to the selection as Illinois Mother of the Year in 2001. In a sense, Smiley has continued teaching. As an author and a speaker, she draws on her mother, her mosaic background as an educator, wife, mother, and entrepreneur. She's the author of 10 books, including the three co-authored with her husband. Together, they also write a monthly column, Homefront, in the Prairie Farmer magazine. This has been Jean St. Peter with the Ford County Record for the week of Wednesday, July 31st, 2019. I look forward to reading with you again soon.